So, over a year ago, I created something called the 7-Day HA Recovery Commitment Challenge. And I've been running it for over a year. It was this free email-based challenge. So, lots of reading, but you would get an email every day for 7 days to help you overcome and tackle the different but important areas that you need to be checking off in order to get your period back. Now, over time, I have collected some really great feedback, and upon working with all of these wonderful, amazing women, really started to learn even more about what works and what doesn't. And so I'm excited to be introducing to you guys the updated version. It's called the 7-Day HA Recovery Kickoff, and it is totally designed to help you not just commit to the process and have all of your ducks in a row in terms of important factors that need to be tackled and issues that need to be overcome in order to get your period. But the whole thing is now based in video. So you can listen slash watch, and every day for 7 days, we will tackle nutrition. There's actually 2 days of that because it's so big. We'll tackle lifestyle, we'll tackle exercise, your support network, your mindset game. Each video goes from anywhere between 12 minutes and 5 minutes, so it's not very long, but you'll get all of the most important areas and the best tips and strategies for how to implement them. Because I know that going through recovery is hard. There's always an area for each person that is a little bit difficult to execute on. And so the goal, or maybe a lot difficult. So the goal of this challenge is to help you have the awareness, the self-awareness, and the tools and strategies you need to overcome each of the different issues that AHA recovery faces for us. So get on it. It's great if you're at the very beginning of recovery or if you're halfway through. I mean, we never know how far through we are until it's over, do we? But no matter where you're at, it can be a really good opportunity to check in and look for blind spots and areas where you might be dropping the ball in your nutrition, in your lifestyle, in, maybe it's your support network that's a problem. Maybe exercise is something that you are still struggling with making changes to. So check it out. Go to thehasociety.com/7-day-challenge, or the link will be on the website. So it may be in the show notes of this show. It may not be. Just go to thehasociety.com and you'll find it in the footer, or you'll find it in the pop-up that happens when you visit the page. And we will see you for day one of the challenge. Welcome to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. I'm Danny Sheriff, your host, certified fertility awareness practitioner, functional nutrition counselor, and founder of the HA Society, and of course, an HA recovery coach who has walked where you currently are walking. This is the place to come if you care about getting your period regularly. This podcast aims to educate, inform, and keep you motivated on your period and HA recovery track. So let's dive in. But last thing, nothing on the show should be taken as medical advice, so please seek the advice of your physician. Okay, everybody, welcome back to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. This is Ashley Smith, and we have Sarah. Sarah, she was on the podcast probably I mean, is it a really long time ago? I feel like she was one of my very, very OG clients. I mean, you guys should listen to her story. She's gonna recap it, but you need to listen to her story because Sarah was like convinced that she had PCOS. And I mean, it's just, I mean, there's nothing about her journey that you're not gonna be like, oh yeah, that's me too. So she's gonna recap it, and then she's really going to just catch us up on life, like what was pregnancy like, the struggles about, stuff like that, and postpartum, and now where she's at postpartum with her baby. So yes, Sarah, please take it away.
Awesome. Thanks, Ashley. Yeah, happy to be back. Love the HA Society and podcast. That was extremely helpful for me. Just in case people don't have time to go back and listen to the previous one, or it's been a while, some quick background on my story. So I had a history of an eating disorder in high school and thought that I had recovered because I had come a long way from starving myself intentionally. So that's kind of where I started. As an adult, I guess this was kind of, back in 2020, I was had been working as a dietitian for years and believed that I was just healthy and eating when hungry, kind of a thing. So looking back, I definitely still had a lot of like lingering rules and mindsets around food, but kind of just believed like, oh, I don't starve myself like I used to, so I'm obviously healthy. Although since I would say like throughout this whole time, I still like periods for a year and then they'd go away for a year and then be back for like just spotty all over the place. So I kind of just believe that my body was a little bit more sensitive than other people's, and I just like, oh, just got to make sure I'm not like too stressed or something. I don't know. Didn't think too much of it. And then we started trying to conceive summer of 2020, and periods were still all over the place. So just took a pretty long time. We did end up falling pregnant. We had a first pregnancy loss September of 2021. And then since it'd been over a year that we were trying at that point, we started doing fertility treatments from w winter of 2021 through fall of 2022. And the clinic that I went to, she was automatically just like, yep, you have PCOS. And I was meeting with Ashley at that time. So I'd kind of been like, okay, I have HA, and like finally was like, I'll do this. And we met with Ashley. And I think that was right around the time that I'd had the first loss. Yes, I think so.
Yeah, well, I mean, because like we had worked during that, like we had worked previously, took a break, came back. Like our stories are interwoven at this point.
I actually do think that my work with you helped me to get pregnant. It definitely did. Because I was actually making progress and we were able to get pregnant. And then we had that first pregnancy loss. And went to the fertility clinic and they were like, you have PCOS. And I think I was just so like, I don't know, probably traumatized by the whole thing that I was just like, is this what I had all along? I thought I had HA, like, just kind of like very unmotivated at that point. Even though I feel like I was like, HA things aren't bad to do. It's just I like it's hard to force myself to like keep doing them when I don't even know anymore. So yeah, after we went through a number of fertility treatments and none of them worked at all, or like even were like causing ovulation when we were doing IUI, we went to a new fertility clinic, and that doctor was straight up just like, I'm not going to do any fertility treatments. You have HA. You might also have PCOS, but I'm like, it's pointless to like do any more letrozole or whatever if you don't get that figured out.
I am always really like, I feel like your experience was the first time I had worked with a client and they were like, yeah, my doctor knew exactly what HA was and was so upfront with me. And like, I just feel like, I still feel like I need to meet this person. You know what I mean? Just 'cause I feel, because like, I don't ever want people to feel like I come across as anti-IVF, but I just want women who are going through IVF to have an informed decision and have a doctor who is knowledgeable to read labs and say that this is HA. And I just think that's like, man, you know what I mean? Like this doctor chose to like give you the information to make your own decision, and she put that over profits, which I think like whether you, like whatever industry you're in, I just think it's commendable to be like to remain human. So I just kudos to that person.
Oh
So.
yeah, she's awesome. And actually, full circle, one of my friends wanted me to go with her to an appointment to like freeze her eggs. And I went with her to the appointment. And it was this doctor that walked in. I knew it was at the same clinic, but I didn't know if we were gonna have the same one. And I was able to show her a picture of my daughter and be like, thank you for
Oh.
yeah, you probably don't remember me because this was like a long time ago, but you like
Oh.
had a pretty big impact. So that was really cool. And I do kind of looking back on that, I know my DHEAS was pretty high,
Yeah.
which is like adrenal stress. And I think I think HA is kind of the same thing as adrenal PCOS. I don't know. I'm like kind of curious the overlap there.
Yeah, so adrenal
Somewhat.
PCOS is a thing. You know what's really interesting? And this is another side tangent. I was in a class and they were talking about how women who've been on long-term ADHD medication, which that was me, had really high
well, had presentations in the Dutch test, which is like the urine testing where they test the metabolites, the same as PCOS. And the hypothesis is because you're taking a, you know, like the stimulant for years. I mean, I was on it for years and years and years and years. And what it presents as is, you know, adrenal PCOS, like just like the stress induced one. But so you're like, so like that was always tough for me because with your labs, you did have that high DHEAS. But then so was mine during HA was always, y'all, out of control. It was almost like not just like a little bit over to where you look at it and it's so glaringly high. And shockingly enough, when I recovered, it went down to normal.
I definitely think there's some sort of
There's,
overlay.
and I'm sure, but then also thinking about this, like, you know, there is a theory about how metabolic dysfunction that is seen in PCOS can be triggered by chronic stress. And also, so think about HA, you are under chronic stress because you're under eating,
Fueled.
over exercising, right? And so it's like, but to your point, like there's so many labs that cross over, but the one thing that you and I had always chatted about is like, but like your FSH and your LH, they're nothing else presents as it, right? But back then, back when you and I used to work with the very, very beginning, you know, like I used to get a lot of clients tell me that they have lean PCOS, which is what people were getting diagnosed with, instead of HA. So it was just always this, but yes, absolutely. So keep going, but that was a side tangent.
No, totally fair. It's I think it's fascinating and so interesting. But yeah, one reason why I love the podcast still is I feel like I learn things and keeps me motivated. So after that doctor said, you know, I think you possibly have PCOS, but you definitely have HA as well. So you need to like get that figured out before you come back. I double downed that fall. So I guess this was fall of 2022. I gained about 20 pounds in a short amount of time. I don't know, maybe like 2.5 months, 2 or 3 months, something like that. And it's numbers. Is that helpful here? Like the 20 pounds or
No,
where I started when I finished or something?
I think it's so helpful, or else I could have never have recovered.
So I was about 97 pounds and I went to about 117, 120 pounds, probably like 117. I think it was 117. Then we got pregnant again, of course, not of course, but during that weight gain time, which kind of makes like it seems to be a correlation there. And unfortunately had another pregnancy loss January of 2023. Felt very kind of defeated in that. And I guess just like big hug to any of you women out there. It's just so sad. Anyway, so we had another pregnancy loss. And a month later, I was actually visiting a friend in Charleston and we were, you know, going on a jog together. And I had to stop because I was like, gosh, my boobs hurt so bad. This was exactly a month after the miscarriage. And she was like, could you be pregnant? And I was like, no. Like the other times, it took like 4 months to get my period
You're
back.
like, so much effort went into it. And you know, I know that you're, because we have so much to cover, but I do think that your story of having two miscarriages, because like you were like, Ashley, I'm so done emotionally. I'm so done. Like my heart aches, my heart hurts. Like I don't even know if I can't. I mean, this is cool that my body can do it on its own. And I'm great that I was able to do more than what I, you know what I mean? But at this point that you got pregnant, you were so done.
John, my husband and I like were not even we weren't not trying, but we weren't trying that month. So I think I was just like, no, probably not. I took a pregnancy test the next morning, had one in my bag actually, and I was like, I don't know, at least I just won't linger in my head. And it was positive. And now I guess as Ashley mentioned, my daughter's almost a year old. So that was that test. I know, so crazy. I guess that was kind of that sort of background and chapter. But the next one was pregnancy. And I will say some challenges that came up was definitely body image. I think that can be a struggle for a lot of folks. I think kind of how I got through that a little bit was just like telling myself like this is temporary kind of a thing. I think me and Ashley actually met kind of early on in pregnancy, and you were helpful because I think something you had said was like, what you're noticing in terms of like a body change, would you undo that so and not have your kid? Like they kind of go together. And I think that was helpful for me to keep kind of remembering
Well,
that.
yeah, and I think it's so, and I love that you're bringing this up because one, I think people feel ashamed to have body image issues when you're like, this is what I've been wanting, but now I feel ashamed. Or you're like, I'm having body image issues, but like I shouldn't because I'm pregnant, and therefore you like this should just magically go away. And then and I think like it nothing magically goes away, but I think that we know pregnancy is something that we've been desiring for so long that I think that we think that these little hangups will go away. And really it's just an invitation, a more of an invitation with a timeline to work on it. You know what I mean?
I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, because I do feel like once you kind of come so far, you're like, gosh, man, am I still like, I should
You're
be
like,
so happy. Like, I wouldn't
you kind of
try.
gaslight yourself. You're like, I shouldn't feel this way. You know what I mean? It's just like, no, maybe we should because we're still working on it. But now let's pedal to the metal. Like, we're going to really work on this now. You know what I mean?
And I will say I'm really glad that I had to do a lot of work with like recovering with HA, just because the first trimester I was so nauseous, so sick. And I mean, good thing I'm okay with just eating like Ritz and Doritos or whatever else.
Yeah, I know so
My
many people go into it. Well, think about it. We go from this disordered to healing, and then we're like, we're gonna be super healthy. And then when I remember, I went through an identity crisis when I was so nauseous that I just couldn't handle veggies, which is a completely normal function of the body due to like it's like the highest rate of like E. coli. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten actually food poisoning from spinach. I've never gotten it from food, like anything else, but like always from spinach. Not saying that you shouldn't eat veggies. I'm just saying that like I went through this massive identity crisis because I wasn't this person eating tons of veggies, being pregnant, because I had this expectation that I was going to be like this fit, pregnant, ultra healthy person. And when you haven't eaten for a few days and your body needs calories, it's going to be like, yeah, that bread and butter, I need it now.
It's kind of like the only food that just doesn't sound nauseating. So that was I think just definitely helpful, and me being okay to rest, just being so exhausted, and just like laying in bed over like it's a beautiful day outside, and I'm like, I'm just gonna sit on the couch. I'm like, who am I? But you know what? I'm glad that I was able to just kind of say like, I'm okay with this. Like, I worked really hard, like, and it's okay. It's only been a good thing so far to rest. So I think, yeah, that was challenging, but I think helpful to go through HA. And then another thing that was really challenging was being diagnosed with gestational diabetes. Actually, my OBGYN, when she called to like tell me what my results were, she was like, don't think I've seen results this high since I've been here. And I was like, whoa, what? She was like, yeah, you don't have to go for the sec. Like, I know there's two glucose tolerance tests, but she was like, you definitely have it, so we don't have to do another test. I was like, oh gosh, okay. But all that to say, my body was incredibly sensitive, so I started like pricking my finger 2 hours after every meal. And I will say that was pretty triggering with some like eating disorder tendencies, because it felt like I was like getting a grade after every meal, and like I'd still be so hungry, or like to like go to a like charcuterie night thing, and I'm like, okay, well, can't eat the fruit or chocolate or wine. I brought like my own veggies and hummus to eat, and then I go home and have a blood sugar spike. I'm like, oh my gosh. I was like starving. Yeah, it was so sensitive. I would just go to people's house with like chicken breasts. Like
Well,
it
you know
was
what's
nuts.
also, I mean, like, I'm not sitting here saying that gestational diabetes isn't real, but I do also know that like stress can falter those readings too, and just pricking your finger can elevate glucose 100%. And that's where I feel like, but then also, not that size matters, but if you were to know Sarah, she shared that she was a very small individual. And for some reason, we associate gestational diabetes with women that are overweight or overweight in pregnancy, which is just, I don't even know how we got here. Because to be honest, the only women that I have known to have gestational diabetes are women who are actually on a petite, smaller size. And I, my thoughts are, who was not eating like crap? Like I, like to the point where it's like, I know what Sarah's going to be eating. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing in it that's alarmist or anything whatsoever. And it's so interesting that we, I don't know, like we just ignore the fact that like whenever your progesterone is really, really high, you lose insulin sensitivity. Like this is potentially a side effect of progesterone being really high, which it is in pregnancy, especially in the second and the third trimester. That's why they like test during those times. You know what I mean? So like, I do think it's, I mean, I haven't had that experience. You know what I mean? I would never, because it's not my field. It's not where I feel comfortable to be like, you know what, let's just see what happens. But the simple fact is that the two clients that I have been very, 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 very petite. And their eating has been like, they have just come out of like HA. So they're not sitting here. They're not eating fast food. They're not going ham. They're not carbo loading, but you know what I mean? So where I'm like, it just makes me wonder, just like the rest of like convention. So just like this conventional nutrition, like what is her name? Nichols.
Lily Nichols. Yeah.
She's completely debunked today.
Yeah, I read the book, The Real Food for Gestational Diabetes, yeah. And she kind of, one thing she did mention was like the horse study. I don't know if you remember that part or read that book.
No, I haven't read that book, but I read her Real Food for Pregnancy in general, and that completely debunks most conventional nutrition advice for pregnancy anyways, you know what I mean? Yeah. With bazillions of studies. Anyways, my whole thought is, I wonder if there's another mechanism that we are missing, because even when it comes to type 2 like diabetes, and this goes over in our HAP course, it like, you know, the data is not solidified that it is carbs and carbs only. It is actually mixed results.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. You know what I mean? It's just so interesting that if it's such mixed results, then like, what are we, why are, like, what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Anyways, that's just my insanity rant for today.
It's been over a year since I read that book, but I think she had some sort of study in there with like horses, and it was like one group of horses was fed like a high grain, like a high carb diet, and the other group was like more of a high fat or protein diet, I guess. And then they like somehow these horses all became pregnant or something. I don't know. However, but the ones that had had a higher grain diet were actually like a significantly less likely to have like, I didn't even know horses had gestational diabetes, but it was like,
me maybe neither. I didn't know either, but my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. It was kind of like her point, or her, I think, point in bringing up that study was just that like, maybe there's even an element of like some people's bodies don't have the enzymes. Absolutely. Or like, I don't know, the enough to like, they're just like not ready for carbs, or like when your body becomes more insulin resistant, like your body just can't handle it. Whereas maybe if you have a higher carb diet, your body can handle it a little bit more. So yeah, side note, but maybe carbs, it's probably better to have more carbs in regularly, so your body can handle it. I don't know.
Well, just think about like the metabolic flexibility. I mean, I know that this is a tangent, but like, it's just like, it's so interesting when you have someone like you present with gestational diabetes and you're like, oh, from eating normal? What?
Yeah.
I can only imagine what a mind trip that was.
Yes, it was very tough. I cried so many times. I think I also had read too that like one of like the rare risk things that can happen with gestational diabetes is like stillbirth. I should definitely not have read that because I read that right out of the gate and was like destroyed by that idea.
Yeah.
So I was like so anal that like my blood sugar went like a point above what it was supposed to. I was just in tears about it. But I was also like starving. It was a bad time, a bad time.
But
of
you're
life.
Like, I'm really hungry. And so that's where it's really tough. We're like, intuitively, I'm so hungry. And I'm sure your body is probably craving carbs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's so tough. Yeah. Cause you read that and you're like, well, if I'm wrong and I go down, like even to this point, if I'm wrong and I go down Ashley's strange hypothesis, this is the like this is what could happen. You're just like, yeah, no, totally.
Yeah.
I can only imagine how tough that was just on your journey overall.
Yeah.
Y'all, we have been trying to record this for like 30 minutes. So here we go. Take 580. Hey, did you know that we support people with HA, low progesterone, anovulation, short luteal phases, and all of the types of challenges that come up with infertility?
Danny and I are practitioners that have helped hundreds of women beat HA, regain fertility, and get pregnant naturally.
Mm-hmm. We are here to break the status quo of spending tens of thousands of dollars on IVF treatments for women who have issues that can absolutely be solved naturally.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. So we do this with our signature program that restores ovulation to regain healthy menstrual cycles. And if you're ready, get pregnant completely naturally.
Mm-hmm. On top of our one-on-one sessions, our fertility program even includes a styling session with Samantha Dawn, who is a body positive stylist. She's also our personal stylist.
Yes.
And an expert in helping you to dress your new and nourished body.
This is so important that we don't even need to convince you on how important this is. We want you to relearn how to nourish your body, claim your fertility, and feel confident in your clothes as your body changes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be painful.
No, yeah, exactly right. It doesn't have to be painful. With a little bit of guidance and support, you can absolutely do this. So if getting your cycle back and if feeling good about the process, if getting pregnant naturally is something you want to do, if you don't want to spend tens of thousands of dollars on medical treatment for something that you don't have to, we have just the place for you to go. So go to thehasociety.com/coaching to learn more about who we are, what we do, and apply today.
Yeah, we looked forward to supporting you.
That was good. Do you like that one?
Yeah, okay. I do like that one. That one's way more us.
Yeah, boom, there you go.
Yeah. So all that to say, I guess maybe if anybody else has gestational diabetes, another thing is like your baby might be really large, is like, and that's kind of could be problematic. But I think I think there's a 75% chance I might have it in subsequent pregnancies. So I don't think I would have been as crazy about it. I think I was way, way anal and just so scared. And Hazel, my daughter, was actually like born at 4 pounds. So very underweight.
Yeah. And you're like, so no, we weren't at a risk for an overweight baby.
And it was like never brought up postpartum. I mean, that there was anything related to gestational diabetes. So I guess kind of sort of with a wrap up with pregnancy is it turned out, like, I don't know if they told me around like 28 weeks or something, that my umbilical cord also wasn't really working. So yeah, I went in for a OB appointment and the like fundus, so like your uterus measurement was small. But like, I'm also not a very like tall person either, so I wasn't really too worried. And then they like had me do an ultrasound and they were like, oh my gosh, your baby is below the first percentile and your umbilical cord doesn't work. We might need to induce you tomorrow. I was like 28 weeks. I was like, what? Yeah. So, they had me come in, a couple times a week to do a non-stress test and ultrasounds. And then every time they were like, okay, we're not going to induce you today. And that was like on top of the gestational diabetes.
So kind of way terrible. To be on like just hanging on the ledge at all points of.
Yeah. That was kind of a lot. So she was able to stay in there till 36 weeks when I was induced. And that's why she was born at like 4 pounds, 2 ounces. And she was in the NICU for a little bit. So because she dropped down to like 3 pounds, something, just a little one. But so tiny. Yeah. But yeah, so that's like the pregnancy side of things. Yeah. And then I guess I think because I probably ended up the third trimester being a bit malnourished, I did gain 13 pounds in pregnancy, which I think I was just starving the whole third trimester, which wasn't great. Oh, and I walked insane amounts, like 10 miles a day when I was in my third trimester, because they told me that like every mile or every minute you walk might reduce your blood sugar by another point. So going nuts about it at like 10 p.m. Anyways, so yeah.
And I feel like, again, that's like important to like, yes, I'm sure maybe telling that to somebody else, but not someone who's like recovered AJ.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that even though I think I'd gotten in definitely a better spot, that was kind of a rough spot. My husband actually had to kind of like be like, are you eating enough? Because you're just like so nuts about your blood sugars. It's kind of worrying me and stuff like that. So yeah, we definitely had to have a good talk about that. So had Hazel, and then so I guess all that to say, I weigh a little bit more now than I do than like right after I had Hazel. So that's just like kind of a weird, not expected thing, but I think because my body was a bit like almost malnourished, which is so sad, in my third trimester. But yeah, so I had her, I think I was around like 130. And then at like the 10-day mark checkup or something, I was like 120. And then I didn't weigh myself, but at my like annual physical, like in June, it was like 125. Mm-hmm. And then I had rhodiola, the virus from my daughter. It was like 123 or something like that. So it's kind of crazy that I actually weigh sort of, more now than I did right after I had her. But yeah, I do think my body was really depleted. And that kind of took me a little bit like back in June to like realize like, oh, I've gained weight since like literally having a baby, which is weird because most people like do the opposite. So I'm gonna, that kind of threw me for a loop a little bit.
Yeah. Which I'm sure I love that you're at this place where you're working through it, because you're like, either this means that I need to bounce back and lose weight. All of society is going to encourage me, or I get really real with myself that I was likely underweight and malnourished while pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to choose to stay here. And like work through being okay with it.
I absolutely feel like my body is so much healthier. Like I'm so much healthier mentally and physically than I was, pre-pregnancy, and honestly even during the gestational diabetes. But I think like priorities absolutely shift, like they did for me when I had Hazel. It was just like, oh, all of that like worry about my body was like probably a little bit more transferred onto her, but less about my body. So so I guess I'll maybe talk a little bit about some of the challenges postpartum, and then some of the like priority shifts or that kind of a thing. That makes sense. Okay. So challenges with postpartum, for a month I couldn't actually walk because of tearing. I actually could walk like a few days after, what like tearing wasn't that bad, but then it like got really bad. And then I couldn't walk for a month. So everybody after baby rest, don't be like, oh, I'm fine. And
your body rest. There's no, you're entering a race that nobody actually cares about. You're not getting a gold star and nobody's going to care a week from then. They're just not like nobody. Like, yes, I'm sure people are like, oh my gosh, you got right back into it. Like, congrats. That's all you're getting. And that, like, nothing else. Like, nobody cares.
So, that was a bit of a challenge. But again, I'm glad that I went through that, like just resting during HA recovery. Cause I think I was just like, you know what, this isn't such a terrible foreign thing. It's kind of nice. Even nicer when, little ones around. Yeah, that. And then also, I had a really big oversupply with pumping. I think because Hazel was in the NICU, I was not ever able to breastfeed. Yeah, so I was pumping, getting mastitis all the time, but pumping out like 12 ounces every 3 hours, which is like,
wow, that is an oversupply.
Yeah, it was kind of nuts. I think I did the math. It was like 26 or not 26, 96 ounces, like on average a day, which is like triplets when they're like 6 month old triplets.
Yeah.
So that was a ton of food, which Ashley was like, I am so glad that I recovered from HA too, because I was able to maintain weight during that time. And probably, I mean, I think breast milk is like, I don't know, 21 calories or something. So like, that's another 1500, 12, I don't know, 2000 calories extra.
They say that the amount of energy you burn is something equivalent to like a marathon or something like it's just like wild. It's wild. Yes. And so like when people are trying to bounce back and want to lose weight while breastfeeding, I'm like, let's just handle the marathon you have in front of you right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So
like you're going to be doing this daily for a long time. Like, let's just handle this. First thing first, you know?
So it's a ton of food. And I think I just gotten more comfortable like during the weight gaining process with like, if I'm hungry, I'm going to eat. I'm not going to like second guess it or be like, oh, well, it's not dinner time or it's not this time or something. But yeah, I was eating giant breakfast, big snack, big lunch, you know, stomach would be growling like 2 hours later, and then eat a nice sized dinner and then be eating like two snacks a night. Like I'd wake up, you know, to pump and then have a bar and then go back to bed and then wake up again to pump and then have a bar, like kind of a thing, and still wake up starving in the morning. It's insane.
I remember eating in the middle of the night. I think I was like, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I just remember pumping and being so hungry that I was like, I just need a cookie. Because you're not going to say and be like, please give me steak and potatoes at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, no, like I don't want to open my eyes because I don't want to fully wake up. There's something hooked up to my nipples, extracting milk, and I'm hungry at the same time.
Yeah.
Just get me something, whether it's a beef stick with some cheese. Like, I just need something.
Yeah. I agree. Those were definitely some of the challenges that came with like the postpartum period. But I will say, I think I was, so my daughter's about a year old and I should be starting my fourth period soon. This one's been a little bit of a longer cycle. So she was fully breast milk fed until I think like 7.5 months. We started supplementing into formula. But even at that point, when she was fully breast milk, I was starting maybe to get a period. Or like a period after that or something like that. So my periods have come back a lot more than expected. And I do think it's because I'm fueling a lot more, even now. I'm not producing any breast milk now, but I'm eating like I did when I was pregnant, at least probably. I'm definitely not as active, but I still feel like I do try, like kind of have realistic every day, try to do X amount during the day, and if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, well. But I will say overall, my priorities shifted a lot. I think the feeding myself so that I could feed my baby was like very important to me, and when to be the best mom that I could for Hazel. And if I'm hangry, which I think like HA days,
fair.
If I'm hangry or impatient, like, oh well. But I just didn't, I don't know, I couldn't really do that with her, like being more impatient than I already was, snappy. Yeah.
That is such a real thing. It's so real. Cause I think about this all the time. I think I had it was a crazy day. I think I had missed lunch and I'm trying to go pick up Nugs from daycare and then drive back. And this was back when I was driving a lot. And I remember being so short on the inside and trying to keep it in. And I was just like, this is simply actually just because my blood sugar is low.
Yeah.
This is actually because I didn't eat enough today. This is not her fault. It's nobody's fault. It's not traffic's fault. It's nobody's fault. And I was like, I could not imagine being that version of me, which I must have been in my HA days. There's no if and ways to put it, you know, and having a child and like the child having to be at having to be on the receiving end of your hangriness just because you want to lose even more weight. Like, you know, like your short-tempered, foul attitude. And like this kid just like got picked up from like daycare and is just like, hey, mom, I love you. Blah, 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 like on the back, you know what I mean? Just spill the tea about their friend who did this. You know what I mean? And so I was just like, wow, like I'm really glad I went through like recovery and just had all this opportunity for healing. And I took it so that like I can actually be a well-nourished in my right mind mom who's not living off of veggies and big salads.
I would say that the AJ Sarah was not flexible at all.
Not
patient at all. I think my husband would absolutely agree with both of those statements. Just not that way. And things just had to be just so, like in a lot of different areas for myself. And now I just can't be that way. Like I feel like being Hazel's mom does require a lot of patience and flexibility. So I think it's I'm just really glad I went through HA to be able to be a better mom and hopefully even an example to Hazel.
Absolutely.
I was actually thinking of that. So after I had that PCP appointment over the summer where I was weighed and I was like, oh wow, I've actually gained weight since I was pregnant. Like, you know how like those things can kind of like get into your head a little bit. Where I was like, okay, interesting, kind of a thing. And I remember I had picked her up and there we had like this full length mirror in our bedroom. And I was about to like walk out the door and then I kind of looked, I'm like, do I look different? And I'm like totally like not even like I'm holding her, but I'm definitely body checking and I'm like, oh wow, am I like kind of bloated to my stomach? Like, and I'm just like noticing. And then I like look at her face just like watching me. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is not put this on you. I did not like it kind of like I want it to stop with me. So I feel like even though that really hit me in terms of like, oh gosh, I've gained blah, 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 or like starting in my head, I think I was like, oh, whoa, like a little bit of a shock of like, Sarah, we got to stop. We are done with this. kind of tell myself.
Yeah. I think that there's always this invitation. There's like always this invitation to be like, well, can I get by with it? And I think that there's even this thing that we told ourselves, like, this is just me. It has nothing to do with anybody else. This is something that's for me. And when you have kids and when you have a daughter and they watch everything you do. And they talked about this and it was so fascinating how like when kids have a healthy, nurturing attachment, in the beginning, you are them and they are you. Like that's how they see the world, right? Like you are them and they are you. And that's why like they need us to co-regulate their emotions. Like they can't co-regulate without our help. That's just nature, how they're designed, which is also a whole other thing of like, wow. If you are in a highly dysregulated nervous system, thinking that you could bring life into this world and you know what I mean? And then like now this child is developing, like they develop their nervous system based off of like yours. Like, you know what I mean? Like your nervous system is help molding theirs. And so if you're coming into this place of motherhood, and this isn't a call to perfection, but this is a call to like, this whole thing, like, oh, this is for me. It only affects me. It doesn't affect anybody else is the most, like, you're in such denial that like, okay, sure. That doesn't work anywhere in nature. Like nature doesn't work like that. The grass affects the trees and the trees affects the grass, which affects the, you know, bushes, which affects the flowers, which affects the soil, which affects, you know what I mean? Like, so stop. That actually isn't present anywhere, but thanks for trying. Even germs and bacteria, like just parasites. Anyways, all these things, you know what I mean? And so like, yeah, just like, just even our nervous system in general impacts that. And so when they see us as them and them as us, it's only until when they get to this age where they're like, meow, 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 meow. And it's because they're actually starting to like separate, I am me and mom is mom. And so when they see that, I've seen my daughter where like, if I'll do something, she'll go and immediately do it to herself. She will, like, it's like I don't have to tell her. I don't have to instruct her. I don't have to do anything like that. So one example, I had got my hair dyed and my extensions put back in. And she said, oh, mommy, your hair changed. It's so beautiful. And then she went to touch her hair. Almost like, mommy, do you know what I mean? Do like I need, you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, no, no, no. Mommy's hair looks like your hair. You know what I mean? But you can immediately, and I don't even know if that's a proper response. I just knew where this was heading. And I was like, interrupt, you know what I mean? Because even though she's three, she's about to be four, like my hair changing, she immediately touched her hair. And I was just like, and I also don't believe that, oh my gosh, you can't dye your hair. You know what I mean? Just for the off chance of what your daughter thinks. However, she is going like, and it's part of life, but something as small as that, could you imagine like the body image or the relationship with food that like we pass on, and like, we're not going to get it right. And we're not going to be perfect.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's this place that you had where you're just like, oh no, we got to get this together.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting this together right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, yeah, kind of to wrap up, I think just some things that have kind of changed. Again, I just feel like and I know I've heard other people say this with HA, but like maybe thinking that their personality was to be anxious and to be like kind of that way. But I think I've kind of realized that that is actually not my personality at all. It's kind of surprising. I feel like I would have thought that I would be like extra anxious with Hazel, and I mean, a little bit when she was first born, but yeah, it's kind of crazy how much like I have fun with her, and I'm not like upset that she like interrupted my lunch or, you know, something like that. I'm just like, oh, you're cute. I don't know. Things like that before I would have been like, my food's cold. And if that's the one meal, then like, or not the one meal, but like, then I'm going to be so upset. So it's just kind of
totally.
Motherhood, I think, has been a lot more fun because of some of the growth that I did through HA. I think it's also just been really wonderful to have a normal appetite. I do think of like in HA days, I wonder if I had some sort of like gastroparesis, maybe everybody does in HA, but like where it was like hunger was kind of like low, and that would kind of stress me out like socially if I like wasn't hungry enough for a meal or something. And so it's just been really nice to have a great appetite now, like, and to not have stomach aches. During HA days, I had stomach aches all the time. I just felt like every time I ate, I was like, oh, I feel so uncomfortable. And now like, I can't remember the last time, like maybe like a bite or two full that I was like, wow, that was so good. I might have had like a bite a little bit more than I wanted, but like, I don't ever have these, I feel out of control with food feelings anymore, which I think is so awesome. And like that, even I remember this was even like maybe over the springtime or something, after I got Hazel down for a nap, I was like, oh, some ice cream sounds really good. And I just put like a scoop in a ramekin thing and sat on the couch and was like, this is so amazing. This is so good. And I would have absolutely never done that. Like in HA days, I would have said, no, absolutely not. And then when I finally did allow myself to have the ice cream, just like bowl after bowl, you know, of course get a stomachache. So I think it's just been really cool to enjoy foods and not have a stomachache after. That's been really cool too. So yeah, all that to say, I think that's kind of
love that. I like remember, you know, it's so interesting that you bring up the stomach ache thing with the ice cream, because I remember you were like, I don't know if I'm meant to do this, you know, I have a stomach ache. And I was like, well, first off, how much ice cream did you eat? I was like, anybody would have a stomach ache, remember, in your beginning HA days. And then now for you to have this full blown circle where you're like, no, I'm actually, because I'm not restricting, I'm not mentally guilting myself, there is no shame, I'm actually just going to enjoy some ice cream, and it's just whatever my normal amount is, and that's it. Like, it's actually nothing more and nothing less.
Yeah,
it's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
So beautiful. Want
to throw that out there to any of the women that are maybe still in the phase where it just feels like they're trying to recover, so they're trying to eat more, but then they feel out of control. And then it's just like this whole loop and circle. Like, I guess I just want to provide some encouragement that like it does change, and there is a day where you will be able to eat peanut butter or eat ice cream or something. And I think, yeah, just enjoy it without a stomach ache and be fine on the other side of it. I remember you telling me, Ashley, that's always stuck in my head too, of like the restrictive mindset. And I think that was where I was at, even though I wasn't necessarily restricting when recovering from or trying to recover earlier. I would be like, okay, I'm eating this now, but like definitely not gonna be eating this ever. Like once I'm done with this, then no more. Like, mm-hmm. And I'd be telling myself the whole time I was eating it. So I feel like now I'm like, oh, well, if I want some with dinner, great. That's fine.
Yeah, it's so interesting that it's like, I'm sure we almost wouldn't have been able to convince ourselves back in the day that like actually moderation is possible if you don't have the mindset of constant restriction mentally, emotionally, or physically. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I would have believed myself. It'd be like, have you seen me around food? No, I can't do that. And now, like, man, we have so many jars of peanut butter, like, you know, the jumbo jars. Like, we have it's just not even something that I even realize is there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I know you don't believe me, but that's just because how many years of restriction have you lived with? And now your habits are have been molded by restriction, not actually hunger signals or fullness signals. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Oh my gosh. Okay, lady. Is there anything else that you want to leave the people with? Anything? I mean, you've shared so much love and wisdom. You know what I mean? But yeah.
Yeah. I think probably just that there is the other side of it. I think sometimes when you're in it, it just doesn't feel like there is the other side, or that like you'll be able to get there, like it's just your personality. But I guess I just want to say, like, it might not be your personality. It might be something kind of just that's been covering up you and your personality for a really long time. So it's kind of more you becoming yourself, not necessarily like changing yourself, I guess, or trying to be a different person.
That's so good, because we're so worried about change. It's like, actually, what if we're not changing? What if we're actually just discovering you? Yeah. Sarah, thank you so much for your journey. Yeah. Oh my gosh, you have shared so many good points. Guys, if you love this episode, just go ahead and just let us know what your favorite part is. Maybe the part that just resonated with you the most. But as always, thank you for being real and just sharing your heart. And we appreciate you, lady.
Thanks, Ashley. Great to see ya.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hey there, it's me, Danny, and I want to tell you about Temp Drop as a fertility awareness method tracking option. So many of you guys know that we actually recommend the fertility awareness method both as you're going through recovery and 100% after you have gotten some cycles back and you're starting to move forward for the rest of your reproductive years. So Temp Drop itself is a wearable fertility monitor, and we love it. It's a wearable device, so you put it around your arm and you can use that instead of taking your temperature manually with a thermometer each morning. So I'm personally a big fan of the manual tracking. All of us at the HA Society are, and that's the method that we use, you know, just using a good old thermometer. We use that with our clients because it's the best way to use it as a diagnostic tool, as a practitioner. And it's also the best way to ensure, if you're trying to avoid pregnancy, that you don't get pregnant. However, manual temping for many reasons is just not always an option. When you're in the middle of recovery, again, we do recommend manual temping, but once you're cycling, the temp drop is actually a really great hack. So it gives you basically everything you need to effortlessly track your fertility status, like where you are in your monthly cycle. So you wear the temp drop sensor while you're sleeping for accurate basal body temperature readings without the stress of early morning wake-ups. So I personally love this because with a toddler, my wake-up times are all over the place, and the occasional sleep disruptions make using an oral thermometer a lot more difficult. So TempDrop's accompanying charting app enables you to track an array of symptoms alongside your basal body temperature. This includes tracking your cervical mucus if you've been using OPKs, and then it also gives you sleep insights too. So you can combine these fertility signs all in one place, and that will help you identify your fertile window, confirm ovulation, plan for your period, and if you're trying to get pregnant, you know, identify whether or not you are pregnant. So whether you're trying to conceive or avoiding pregnancy, or you want to chart for health reasons like HA recovery, making sure your cycle's not slipping back in the HA direction, TempDrop makes fertility awareness accessible to all women, even if you don't have regular cycles or sleeping patterns. So track your ovulation in real time with the TempDrop, and we are lucky enough to have a 15% off code. So if you go to their website, they're usually having a sale, but you can stack this code on top of the existing code. So just go to tempdrop.thehasociety.com and use the code AFHASociety. I think too, if you just go to tempdrop.com and use AFHASociety at the checkout, that will work too. So happy temping and good luck.
This episode is brought to you by Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules. Did you know that in terms of nutrient density, beef liver actually blows vegetables and fruits out of the water? If you're a client of mine, you have already been instructed to eat beef liver either fresh or in capsule form. I recommend it for anyone and everyone who is, of course, dealing with amenorrhea and fertility challenges out there, but I may even recommend it for just everyone in general. Get your husbands on it, get your partners on it. If you have a history of HA and add on top of that maybe a history of the pill, maybe you've been pregnant before, you know, through treatments or other, like you've just, your body's been through anything, you know, you're absolutely 100% dealing with a nutrient deficiency of some kind. And while it's true that testing is going to be the best way to understand those exact deficiencies, eating nutrient-dense, real food is going to be one of the most important next steps that you take with or without testing. So I've been using and recommending Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules for years now, and the capsule form makes it so easy to get your liver in every day, and I appreciate the transparency of this product in particular above others. So in case you're wondering, it's completely natural. This is freeze-dried beef liver in capsules. It's organic, it's made from Australian beef, and my favorite of their products is the liver with kelp because of the iodine from the kelp, which is important for overall thyroid function, which is often low in women with underperforming hormones. So rather than eat seaweed snacks every day, I get to take this beef liver with the kelp for my iodine. So if you're recovering or working on a fertility journey right now, do not skimp the nutrient rich source of beef liver. Get 10% off your order with the HA Society and support your favorite podcast along the way. They ship to most countries, so you should be covered. Just go to grasslandnutrition.net and use HA Society, just HA Society, at the checkout for the 10% off. That's grasslandnutrition.net with the code HA Society.
Thank you so much for listening today, guys. Please subscribe to the podcast, and if you could head to iTunes specifically and leave a rating or review, that would help so much because it makes it easier for other people with HA who are Googling around to find the podcast really easily. So if you do that, you're doing a service to all of the women.